Today's episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Go and download the app and join myself and Doug Norrie after Tuesday night's game between Brooklyn and the Milwaukee Bucks, pivotal Game 5. As we break it all down, you can get in on the action. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. And of course, it is not a fun podcast as we come off of the loss, series tied 2-2. But really, the biggest news and where we start is obviously the injury to Kyrie Irving. Ankle sprain, not sure yet what the severity is, more details to come, but it's obviously another big blow. Two out of three superstars out of commission for Brooklyn really changes the expectations, obviously, for game number four and then the series overall. But we stay central to the idea of what it costs you when you lose Kyrie, the impact that that has, not just from a scoring standpoint, but from a rotation standpoint, from a role player expectation standpoint. It just really takes the air out of what's been an incredible playoff run so far for the Brooklyn Nets. And we dive in on it all. We're here for you, friends, right after the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. I'm Doug Norrie, owner, operator, DFSR.com. If you need a projection for FanDuel or DraftKings, head on over to DFSR.com. We got you covered over there. And that's Adam Armbrecht, the voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster, the host of the One Giant podcast, where he's covering the New York football Giants. Buddy, how are we doing following a game for a loss?
Yeah, I think the loss in itself would have been difficult pill to swallow, I guess we can say. But obviously, the headline here for Brooklyn Nets fans is made even more brutal by Kyrie Irving going down. This is the picture that you painted. Yep. When we've talked about the Nets this season, the playoff run, all this stuff, right? You highlighted it, I mean, months ago now. The only thing that could derail this team would be injuries. And now, inside of this one series, we've seen two superstars go down. And while there's some possibility that Harden's going to make his way back here, this injury for Kyrie looked brutal in the moment, made even worse by seeing him on crutches after the fact. Just brutal. I mean, the loss almost becomes secondary in some ways because this injury just really snatches the heart, I think, out of a lot of Nets fans.
Yeah, it's just terrible. He goes up for a bat. It's a very physical game. We're going to get into some of the game here, obviously. There's a lot to talk about with this one. He goes up to finish sort of an in-transition basket, and as he's coming down, Giannis is underneath him. And he lands on his foot, and he immediately crumples in pain, and you hold your breath as the ball goes up the other way on the court because you don't see Kyrie appear, and then they call a timeout immediately, and then he's still on the ground, and that is when you really, really start to worry, right? So they go to commercial, and then he actually walked himself to the locker room, and he was clearly in lots of pain as the camera follows him down, and then they get the news after the game that he left the game on crutches, and he had an x-ray that was negative, so that's good. You know, no real, it doesn't appear as if there's long-lasting damage there, but it's definitely a sprained ankle, and sprained ankles can keep you out for lots of time too, depending on where it is. High ankle sprains, obviously worse than low. They did not say which one of the two that it was, but yeah, it's so demoralizing. As just like a fan and a podcast and Nets and all the other stuff to have this stuff. You know, we talked about the fragility of the team, and every team's fragile, and that's some more than others. But this is also not one of these like this kind of injury is not you're injury prone kind of thing, right? Like, it's just you went out for a basket, someone's foot was underneath you, and you twisted your ankle. It could literally happen to anybody in basketball. Yep. And it really puts the Nets, you know, sort of like hopes here have very much at risk because we saw what happened also when he left the game. But yeah, no, it's just a completely brutal blow no matter which way you look at it.
And you were mentioning the sprains because the grades go 1 through 3 with the worst being a grade 3. But, you know, it's mentioned here, even a grade 1 sprain can result in 1 to 3 weeks absence. So, you know, on the spectrum of what this could look like potentially for Kyrie, unlike even, let's say, the James Harden injury that we'll talk about a little bit later, a hamstring that maybe you can, you know, work your way through and come back. Those timelines can be very fluid. Ankles in general and ankle sprains tend to be all you can do is stay off it. I mean, you know, to compare it to being your, you know, you or me around the house, right? You twist or sprain your ankle. You're just like, all I can do is ice it and keep pressure off it, keep weight off of it until it's ready to get back out there. And that's just for me to walk around the house, not to get back out on the basketball court and really dive in on it. I think you make the right point. This is just a fluky injury. It's not injury prone, and it is Kyrie Irving. So it's another level as opposed to the James Harden injury, where it feels like, man, this is an out of the nowhere thing. Kyrie Irving, who has been, in spite of his occasional absences from the team throughout the regular season, he's been everything that you've wanted on the basketball court. And when Harden first went down in this series, we thought, okay, what's that going to look like? And then we got that game 2 performance and we said, okay, great. The Nets are just going to rebalance themselves, redistribute some of the offense between KD and Kyrie. If you went back and looked at the production numbers, they were just going to increase their volumes a little bit. So everything looked like it was on track here. You had a bad game number 3 for really both of the stars, but this just... It feels like it's stealing away a postseason from Kyrie where he was going to be making kind of one of those career statement stat lines for himself. And now you don't know if it's going to be the rest of this series, if the Nets can make their way through it into the next series. And it just really, it throws off. I mean, you know, think about it on the other side of it. This would be like Middleton going down 2 games ago and then Giannis going down, I guess, essentially. I just don't know how a team fights through something like this. And you could see that it had an impact in the game on the court in game 4 as well.
Clearly. I mean, you just, like you said, at some point you just can't keep losing all your best players. Quick question about this. Did you think it was, I saw conflicting sort of opinions about this. Did you feel like it was a dirty play on the part of Giannis? Like, do you feel like it was a purposeful undercut? That was not my initial reaction to it. But I did, and I don't know if it was like Nets fans in the moment sort of getting caught up in it. But I don't. Did you feel like that was an avoidable play in the grand scheme of basketball, or did you feel like it was just kind of sort of like what can happen in the course of a game? Because I was actually surprised to see some of the dirty stuff, but then it might have had to do with how the game was sort of flowing in general.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they said it on the live broadcast too. Maybe they'll go back after the fact and retroactively give Giannis a flagrant foul. Like, when Kyrie Irving ends up hurting himself, you look at it and say, oh, was that a dirty play? Because he kind of backs his hip in, you know, backs his hip in as he's trying to, but he's trying to box him out. So it's that weird thing of, if Kyrie doesn't jump as high as he does, which is such a silly thing to say, but if Kyrie doesn't jump as high as he does, when Giannis goes to back him out a little bit, it looks more like just a body bump as opposed to getting underneath the body of Kyrie and trying to move him out of the air. Giannis is a pretty big guy, especially compared to Kyrie. And Giannis as a player has, you know, no real history of doing the little dirty. You know, if it had been PJ Tucker, I may have had a different reaction because he's one of the guys that was getting physical in this game, and he's the guy that gets underneath player skin. So, you know, I'm willing to look at it and it being Giannis and just say, man, I think it's this confluence of circumstances, the same way that when Kyrie comes down, I don't think that Giannis's foot being there was an intentional thing. They're talking about the way that he bumps into his body. So if I'm willing to look at it and say, boy, that's just a really fluky thing where Kyrie comes down on Giannis's foot, I'm also willing to look at the play itself and say, I think Giannis is just easing himself in to get position, and it happens to come at the perfectly wrong time to throw Kyrie off balance. He ends up underneath him. He steps on him. So I don't see anything dirty. I wouldn't be shocked maybe if they do give him the retroactive flagrant, because that you know, tends to be the trend for the NBA on a lot of these kind of plays. But I don't hold anything away from it. And I think maybe Nets fans in the moment are just rightfully, understandably so, are just feeling like tragedy is befalling us. And you know, you tend to lash out sometimes when something like that goes on.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right, we're going to talk a little bit more about the game, a little more about what this absence means, get into some of the other stuff that we saw. First, got to talk to you about our friends over at Indeed. If you're the hiring expert for your company, what you need is help making your short list of quality candidates. You need a hiring partner who helps make your life easier. You need Indeed. It's the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, that's 1. Screen, that's 2. Interview, that's 3. All on Indeed. You get a quality short list of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. And you're only going to pay for the candidates that meet those must-have qualifications. I know I'm trying to hire a personal assistant these days, a virtual assistant. I know I'm going to be using Indeed to make sure we get the absolute list of perfect candidates. It makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and easy. They have instant match, which gives you those quality candidates that fit the job description immediately. And you can choose from more than 130 skills tests. Then add those must-have requirements. You only pay for the applications that meet them. Get started right now with a free $70 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/locked. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/locked. Indeed.com/locked. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
And of course, got to tell you about our friends over at BuiltBar.com. Felt like the kind of post-game, and even this morning as we got on to record, I need a little energy boost because I'm feeling low after a loss, losing not just the game, but also another star for the Brooklyn Nets. That's when I reach for a Built Bar. They're delicious. They have that great flavor. It's not like those other protein bars. They're chewy, weird textures. Who knows what kind of flavors are in there. And not only that, you get something like a coconut almond, a raspberry, a peanut butter brownie, or a double chocolate. You're going ahead and giving yourself 17 grams of protein with only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 grams of net carbs. You can head over to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your first order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. So, you know, we mentioned about, because I kind of want to get into the rest of the game here and how it looks for Kevin Durant to try to lead this team by himself, but you know, Steve Nash did come out after the game, obviously losing Kyrie Irving, and said, "I thought we had a pretty good start. The level dropped a little bit. They, the Milwaukee Bucks, got going on some transition breakdowns. They got the three balls going and saw offensive rebounds, 50-50s, and got a little separation going into the half, and then we struggled in the second half." This is one of those things where after the Kyrie injury, in the same way that we said kind of after the James Harden injury, where you go, okay, so you're going to tweak some things. Let's get back to those principles that we've talked about and less about the schemes that we're running and how do we tweak and adjust. Once Kyrie goes down, though, I can't really look at Steve Nash and the coaching staff and say, well, you got to make some adjustments, because essentially the adjustment you make is, do you know any other all-stars that would be available to step into this game? Because you saw Kevin Durant in the second half of this game trying to get the job done, but you mentioned at the top it was a physical game, and I think that Kevin Durant is the one who's going to pay the biggest toll for the physicality of a series like this, not just offensively, but then defensively too, because the lift is pretty heavy on both ends of the floor. And I'm not saying he's not capable of doing it, but it's just very hard to set an expectation that what we need you to do is carry us offensively, and then also you have to pick up one of their two best players on the other end of the floor and at least on a handful of possessions shut them down.
Yeah, the load is incredibly high for him right now. It's frankly almost too high. I was getting concerned as the game went on that they probably should have just, I know they took him out with like 4 minutes or 3 minutes left to go or something like that, and I thought personally it could have been much earlier when the game was just did not look like it was recoverable. And there was like, you know, there's a couple points where they're sort of making a run, and you know, Middleton hit a totally backbreaking three later in the game that sort of sealed the deal for the Bucks. But it was more speaking to the idea that you know, my thought on taking him out was that it was just clear that the burden is almost just too high for him at this point, realistically. I mean, too high. Maybe for a single game, no, but for an extended playoff run, probably yes. And he's, you know, he's clearly playing at like a crazy level. The defense, again, was amazing. right? So it's like not for lack of, it's not for lack of talent, and not that he can't do it. It's just that at some point when you're asked to sort of just do every single thing on the basketball court, and not only is it too incredibly taxing for your body, it's also very, especially on the offensive end, very clear what a defense needs to do to sort of stop it, right? Like when there's no other real fungible threats on the court, you know, on the level of Kyrie Irving or James Harden or something like that, then we see what happens when Durant starts pressing. He definitely took some bad shots. I don't blame him. Like, I think that was just sort of what was warranted. In the end, if you're trying to get back into the game, Kevin Durant just might need to go play some hero ball, and that's what's going to, that's just maybe your last and best hope. But it was clear that you know, this is going to be problematic for him too, because now, you know, in the past when we saw, you know, we saw a very physical game. I do want to talk about the physicality in this game too, but or maybe it actually just warms its way in here. This was an incredibly physical game, and that also adds to the sort of the overall just pounding that you can take, is that when it's already, you're already needing to put max effort in on both ends, and the game is very chippy and very physical, and they were clear they were trying to get very physical with Durant, and PJ was all over the place with this, and whether you want to call him a heel or if he's like doing the thing he needs to do for his role, or if that's just how he plays, whatever, it all has a cascading effect on that Kevin Durant. Yeah, at some point, it's just probably a little too much, and we might be reaching the breaking point here on that. And we saw what happens, right? When the second half was a very tough road to sled, whatever you do, sled, road, climb, whatever you do that makes whatever makes that road tough. We definitely saw that in the second half for Durant, where everything just got significantly harder for him.
Yeah, and I want to talk, you said the physicality, and also some of the things that I think we saw in the second half that maybe are adjustable, or just how they try to approach keeping themselves in this game. But obviously today on the road to the finals, our NBA playoff coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. And I'm going to tell you right now, regardless of the result, I think we can go ahead and count on Kevin Durant to have one heck of a performance coming up in game number 5. It's only worth it if you enjoy it, and at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season with an ice-cold Michelob Ultra. You mentioned the physicality. The one thing that, and I agree, and we saw this early in the game too, even when Kyrie was on the floor, it's not like Milwaukee flipped that switch. I think Milwaukee learned from game 3 and coming into game 4 that was going to need to be a part of what they did. Stay physical with Kyrie, with Kevin Durant, and then force some of these others to step up and play their roles on a more significant scale. But I did think that inside of that second half, you mentioned about, I don't knock Kevin Durant for going into hero ball mode, so to speak, because it's all that was going to happen there. You know, Harris has another quiet night. Bruce Brown is quiet. Blake Griffin, like, you know, the entire cast of characters. And obviously they all get a more difficult task when you lose Kyrie Irving in support of the superstars. But there were a couple of early sequences, I thought, in the second half, in the third quarter, that the Nets needed to, it's difficult to say it, to lean in further to playing team basketball. And all I mean by that is there were sequences when Kevin Durant got into the lane off of a first or second pass, and it was a contested double team coming over to him and trying to rise up above that. There's probably a third pass to make out of it. Even Joe Harris, who's had a struggle this series, again, first or second pass where he gets it going to the lane or driving the baseline, but is going to get met at the rim by Portis, by Brook Lopez. You got to find the third or fourth pass. I don't know what the results are going to be there, but I think that the way to counteract physicality is with ball movement, spacing the floor, spreading them out, and kind of forcing, because I think physicality does come at the price of sometimes losing the fundamentals, right? You're willing to, PJ Tucker, I'm more concerned about playing a physical game of basketball than I am about playing clean defense. And I'm not saying that negatively. It's probably the smart thing to do. But if you can continue to try to work the ball around the perimeter, try to force PJ Tucker to chase, if he's late on his closeouts and also trying to play physical defense, that's where you get some of those extra fouls. I thought the Nets were getting some of the Milwaukee players into foul troubles throughout the early stages of this game. It got away from them in the second half for a lot of obvious reasons, but they're going to have to find a way to lean into, and this is where things fall apart here, as I'm walking myself into a problem. I was going to say their athleticism, which has been absolutely decimated when you take away James Harden and you take away Kyrie Irving. That was one of the biggest problems. Who replaces Kyrie Irving minutes when you don't have James Harden either and you don't have ball handlers? The Nets were out of ball handlers in support of Kevin Durant in this one, and that, I think, also exposes another layer. Now Kevin Durant has to handle the ball coming up the court as well. They tried to do it with a couple of different role players, but it completely disjoints the offense. It completely throws Kevin Durant out of rhythm to get into his spots more naturally, and he ends up spending a lot more time working to the space to get the attempt, and then that shot is that much more difficult as well.
Well, you walked yourself right. You walked yourself back into the place where I was going with this, which was going to be.
I did it. Don't worry. I got us there, buddy. It was a long and winding road, but I got us there.
It all sounds good to say you need more ball movement. You need this, and that is obvious. And I'm not saying that you don't know this. It's like it is true. It's just that this all becomes by degrees harder when you don't have anyone that can, like you said, keep the other team honest in terms of ball handling or even floor spacing. Right? Like there's that you can continue to try to move the ball, but like the reason the ball movement looks so crisp and clean when those other superstars are out is because you need to be in at least two guys' hips all the time. We've talked about this before, right? Like if you, as a defensive player, there's no space that can be given to Kyrie Irving or Kevin Durant in offensive sets, right? Because, and so when that happens, it's much easier to space the floor because, you know, two guys or, you know, two fifths of the defense is going to, you can effectively actually take them away if you were able to just use like decoy moves to get those guys off ball, right? This no longer happens. Like, you don't need to do that with Mike James or Blake Griffin or Jeff Green or any of these guys. Like, you can just allow them to shoot. I mean, I feel like they've done this with like a lot of these guys. Like Blake Griffin's free, has the absolute green light to shoot threes when he wants to by per the Milwaukee Bucks. So like it doesn't really, it's not that it doesn't work and it's not possible, it's just not like sustainable because the defense just doesn't need to stay honest. And that's why all these shots for Durant sort of started to look harder, but while also they were sort of also the only option at times too, right? It wasn't like for better, it wasn't sometimes for lack of, you know, ball hogging or you know, that he was like, you know, just doing too much of this stuff. It's just like, well, this is just what's available. And yeah, it's just really a problem. All right, we're going to get a little bit more. I know it's been a very negative podcast, but not sure which other way to take it here. We're going to get back into this in a second. First, going to talk to you about our friends over at Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Basketball in the middle of the playoffs these days. You can get all your latest news, odds, and info, including other NHL games, UFC over the weekend, the fight action. It's all there for you on Bet Online. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. It's your chance to get into the game as these teams make their runs through the playoffs. Head on over to the website betonline.ag on your mobile device and sign up today. That's totally free, but you're going to want to make a deposit. And when you do, know that you're going to get a 50% welcome bonus, but you have to use the promo code LOCKEDON. Promo code LOCKEDON, 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
So when we talk about, I mean, just in the in-between here, because we'll have another preview of the Tuesday night matchup, obviously, you mentioned at the top, you can catch us on Locker Room. We'll be doing our thing. Hopefully, it's going to be in celebration of getting the Nets back out in front in this series. But even around the Kyrie injury, then you talk about the Harden piece, and then there's another injured player in Jeff Green who came back in this game. And they said it on the broadcast, said in the post game. I don't think that was the plan to have Jeff Green give you what ended up being 27 minutes. You probably would have liked to have done the proverbial, you know, the 15-minute little sample size, get his feet wet, get his legs back underneath him. Instead, they had to try to lean on him a little bit more. I think he'll look stronger in game number 5. But even James Harden, you know, I put it out there. I said, what's going to keep Harden from playing in game number 5? Well, probably the health of his hamstring would be the thing that would stop him. And Steve Nash came out and said before the game, said after it, Harden has to get through multiple healthy physical sessions of practice basketball before he's going to be cleared. And I think obviously the needle starts to move more in the direction of, hey, if he's close, let's get him out there because we're close to maybe desperation mode. But I don't think you fully push that button until you're down 3-2 in the series going back to Milwaukee. Like, there's just no world where you can put Harden back out there to tweak something in game number 5, because then he's done. then he's fully done for the series and it's over. So I do wonder this kind of fine line that the Nets are trying to balance with getting Harden back, because if you could get him back on the floor, obviously it would balance things back out. We'll dive into that a little bit more, I think, tomorrow. As it stands right now, though, the only other thing I'll say is, did you think that, again, this feels like after game three, did Milwaukee do anything substantial in that game number four? Or is it just that Kyrie gets hurt and that makes it easier for Milwaukee to do everything they want to do on both ends of the floor? Like, this wasn't substantial adjustments. I know Bobby Portis, again, had some early minutes. He's a little more athletic for the Bucks than maybe Brook Lopez, but this was more of the same and some more of their threes fell. I mean, and by the way, I said that kind of off the cuff there. They were 16 of 47. I mean, they shot 34% from beyond the arc. There's not a lot of stats here that are going to tell you that the Bucks should have won that game, short of talking about the injury.
No, this is what makes it even more brutal, is that this, like, it is the Nets in even a three quarters healthy kind of version are probably winning this game again, right? Like, it's just this team is so beatable. They're so predictable. They have things that really work. The Nets have done a decent job of, like, making sure it's, like, not totally backbreaking for them. The Giannis stuff in the middle. I thought they've still done I know he had 34 points. I still think that they're doing a good job of making his life pretty difficult at times. Middleton's shot, again, didn't really fall in the same way that it did for game two. The floor spacing continues to sort of be an issue. I like this just team's just fine, but they're not, like, it's just so beat. They're so beatable. This is, again, like, what makes it, if you hear the frustration in my voice, it's just because of, you know, the Nets even, they really weren't in this game too much, but the fact that it's still like an 11-point game when they're just playing with one great player and just legit all role players, and wherever you want to put Joe Harris in that hierarchy, whatever. But it's just such a bummer, because the Nets really, at a full strength Nets, this series is just over. I'm very convinced. And that we're just talking about, you know, the next round against probably Philly, maybe Atlanta. But now the fact that the script's been flipped so much that this version of Milwaukee, this version of Milwaukee, if the Nets aren't going to have Kyrie, what you see is their offense actually doesn't need to be that good, because the defense makes it so problematic for the Nets that the offense can just be sort of meh and be good enough to win. And now we've seen that for two games in a row, where it's like the offense doesn't need to do too much. The defense is legit. Like, the defense is very much a problem. The length is very much a problem. It's going to be a problem for a lot of teams. But the offense just isn't really anything that you are worried about really at all. And at that point, a Nets team that has pretty much, you know, just at least two of these, like Kevin Durant and then one of the other two dudes, is a clear favorite to win. It's just that they're not anymore. No, so from an adjustment standpoint, no, this is very much the same. Get Giannis in the lane, trying to get Middleton into some mid-range stuff, which they continue to try to do. They did try to, like, make more of a point to get Holiday more involved, it seemed like. I thought it was just a little easier. Actually, frankly, it got a little easier for him when Kyrie left the game, because Kyrie's been pretty damn good on defense, too. And, like, that's the other problem, which was sort of underrated, is that Kyrie's defense has been pretty good in this series. And, like, very active, very engaged, really kind of harassing, specifically Holiday, around the perimeter. And, you know, for all the stuff you think about with his offensive game, he's been really, really good at that end, too. And so, no, this team is just, maybe can win the championship, I don't know. But, I mean, they're going to be getting, if they win the series, they're going to be getting closer, I suppose. But it's not because they're, like, some great team or anything. It's just because, frankly, they've just gotten lucky with these injuries. I hate to say it that way, but I don't think they made a ton of adjustments. They kind of didn't need to, because at that point, the stuff just works good enough and you can just win. So I don't know why you would make a ton of other changes. But I didn't really see anything different from the team, and it was just kind of very predictable. And sometimes this predictability is just good enough to win when the personnel on the other side of the court just isn't up to snuff. And that's also the case.
Yeah, well, it's like predictability, but in a positive way, consistency. So it's be healthy, be available, and run your and run the offense the way you're going to. And like you said, defense is incredibly strong. But to your point, if not for these injuries, either one of them, take either one of them off the table for being injured, and I think that the Nets, if haven't already won this series, they're maybe a game away coming back to Brooklyn to say, let's wrap this thing up in a gentleman's sweep. And that's the disappointing part, I think, right now. Like you said, it's a part of it. The Bucks don't need to apologize for it. Injuries happen, but it's just disappointing because you're not getting... It's weird. This is a 2-2 series, but you're not getting the version of the series that we all thought when it started. After the first two games, we kind of thought, oh, this could have been the NBA Finals of the playoffs here. Then the first two games happen, and you think, never mind, the Nets have this thing under control. Clearly, the Bucks aren't a team that's going to be able to handle them with this offensive firepower, even after losing Harden. And then Kyrie goes down, and it seems to just devolve from there a little bit. So It's deflating in that sense. I will say, we'll get into it more tomorrow, but I do think that there is still a path forward, even without Harden, even without Kyrie. Call it a tease here, but there is a path for the Nets to win game number five at home with only Kevin Durant at the helm. I think they need to do... The coaches have to get in here on this and do a little bit more in terms of how are you going to provide the respite for Kevin Durant for a handful of possessions, whether he's on or off the court. How are you going to stem the tide there a little bit? Obviously, you're going to need some other people to step up on the offensive end, certainly. But I do think there is a way for the Nets to still come out of game number five, going back to Milwaukee, up 3-2, and looking to get themselves at worst to a game seven. It's not where we thought we would start this series, but I still do have some, if not diminished, confidence that the Nets can get themselves through this even after these two injuries.
All right, we'll talk a little bit about that on tomorrow's podcast as we preview Game 5, what the Nets can possibly do to keep their heads above water here as we try to get one of these or both of these guys back healthy in order to continue to make a championship run. In the meantime, make sure you rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. 5 stars or bust helps us climb those podcast charts. Rate and review the podcast wherever you listen.
And of course, you can get all the sports news that you need in under 20 minutes with a Locked On Today podcast, where your host, Peter Bukowski, updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of us, all of your local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. So far away, I wish you were here before it's too late. This could all disappear before the doors close and it comes to an end. With you by my side, I will fight and defend. Avril Lavigne.
Oh, one of the all-time great American poets. A little skater boy action. We will be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.